Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
So the topic for the rest of the hour, election security in the digital age. So last week, I was in New York City and I went to the Morgan Library Museum and it was to see an exhibit about Walt Whitman, the self-described bard of democracy. And the American dream for Whitman was the promise of democracy and the democratic experiment. As University of Virginia professor Mark Edmondson put it in a recent essay, Whitman understood that he was part of one of the greatest experiments since the beginning of time, the revival of democracy in the modern world. So the question is that experiment at risk? And the thought is inevitable after the experience of recent years, especially with Russian interference. The Senate Intelligence Report last week concluded that the election systems in every state of the Union was targeted by Russia in 2016. So looking ahead, how concerned should we be? Why can't Republicans and Democrats agree on how best to preserve voting integrity? What should be done? What can be done? To discuss questions like these, I'm joined by two experts. Larry Norden is director, of the Brennan Center's Election Reform Program. The Brennan Center is at New York University. Welcome.
Thanks, Chris.
Alex Findley is a former officer in the CIA's Directorate of Operations, where she served in West Africa, in Europe, and she joins us by Skype from Barcelona. Glad you could join us.
Thank you for having me.
And give us a call if you have a question about election security. What do you want to know? What do you think could be done? The number, 651-227-6000. Again, that's 651-227-6000. So for both of you to give us some context, the Senate Intelligence Committee report is bipartisan. And what highlights did you take away from the report, Alex?
Well, like you said, first of all, it was bipartisan, which was refreshing to see. But I think it also made clear just how sweeping this was. We heard from Robert Mueller again last week that this was a sweeping and systematic effort to influence the election. But it still has been painted by some people, including people in the White House, that this was just a few memes on Facebook and was not really that big a deal. But the Senate report last week outlined even more than what we had already seen with Mueller's report of just how vast and wide this operation was and that they targeted all 50 states.
Larry?
So, you know, I do think one of the more troubling things in the report is something that people that have been looking at this have been concerned about is the question of what the Russian government was doing around election infrastructure in 2016. There's no evidence that that they did change any voter registration information, for instance, or and there's although the report takes pains to say that this issue hasn't been looked at perhaps as carefully as it should, no evidence that they did anything to change votes. However, there's a warning in there that, you know, what they may have been doing in probing all of these systems around the country is to perhaps do more damage at a later date. And that's certainly one of my big concerns. And while I was very happy to see the bipartisan agreement on what the threats were, one concern that I was left with was that the recommendations about what to do, to me, were not did not have the kind of urgency that I hoped they would. I think there's still a lot that can be done ahead of the 2020 elections to make sure that our infrastructure is as secure as possible, and we should be doing everything we can to make sure that, that happens so that when people go to vote on 2020, they can have full confidence that their votes are going to be counted.
Okay, I want to get to what can be done. But first, Alex, I imagine that you've dealt with redactions during your career. And one of the things that I took away, now I'm just, you know, reading the paper, listening to public radio, and parts of the recommendations for what could be done were redacted. And of course, my response to this is, really? Redacting recommendations for the future from the Senate Intelligence Committee? What's going on here?
Well, we don't know if those were redacted actually to the committee itself. They have clearances, so they were likely able to see it. So the question is, was that just redacted for public consumption? And so you have to wonder if some of those recommendations include covert action and include using the National Security Agency, for example, to go more on the offensive rather than on the defensive, or to set up CIA, for example, to carry out any particular operations, that would be considered covert action. That would require a presidential directive, and therefore that would all be classified. And so, I don't know if what's behind those black highlighter, but if it's something like that, then that would make sense as to why it was redacted.
And so, Larry, you'd mentioned what can be done. I think that's one of the questions. What can be done now? Because the 2020 election is coming up very, very soon. I can't believe that we're already almost into August. The summer seems to be flying by. So what realistically can be done now?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to note that a lot has happened since 2016 to secure our election infrastructure. First of all, there's much greater awareness on the part of election officials at the state and local level that this is a real problem and something that they have to address. And there's been much better, by all accounts, information sharing between the intelligence agencies, the federal government, and state election officials to understand the threat. So, among other things, there's been some significant replacement of antiquated voting machines, particularly the paperless voting machines, which the Senate Intelligence Committee and the National Academy of Science before them and many others have said should be replaced because they are not secure, and there's not a paper backup to check if there are problems with the system to make sure that we're accurately counting votes. And more are doing post-election audits, other things like that. I would say there are basically four areas where we could still use more resources for state and local officials to secure the elections. One is just to get more support, IT support, cybersecurity support for local election officials. We know from the Senate Intelligence Report, from the Mueller Report, locals were targeted. They're often the weakest link in our election system. We've got 8,000 election jurisdictions, many without any kind of cybersecurity or IT staff. Upgrading things like voter registration databases to make them more secure. And as I said, replacing these antiquated systems that often don't have paper records is really critical. And there's still a lot to do in all of those areas.
And Alex, I want to ask you, I mean, Russia obviously dominates the whole discussion, but, we have troubled relations with North Korea, Iran, a number of other countries. And is there a stock of knowledge out there to tap into that says, look, lots of foreign actors could now play games with the U.S. election?
Yes, for sure. That Russia is not the only one with the resources or the know-how. And we've already seen some other, North Korea going against Sony and some of these others. So we know these other actors are out there and do these things. Building on what Larry said, I would say it is very important to protect the actual infrastructure, but I would say that election security is also bigger than just the infrastructure. So it's true that we're much more aware now after 2016 of what Russia did and what their tactics were, but they also know that we know that now. So they're going to change their tactics going forward, and so will other countries. And so part of the election security has to deal with the security of actual voting machines and, like we said, all of the infrastructure. But it also is much bigger because, of course, what Russia was doing was also an influence campaign. It was built to divide the electorate, and it was built to create distrust. And so one of the concerns for, we've talked about with hacking into some of the local systems, if you can just tally and play with the numbers. And even if in the end you're not changing any kind of a vote, if you have built enough mistrust within the population,
right,
that they don't accept any response that you give them, you know, the foundation of democracy is voting and is faith in the institutions. And so I would argue that part of election security is maintaining and building that faith in the institutions as well.
So give us a call with your questions about election security and this issue of trust that, Alex, this is incredibly important, and that we live in a society where trust in major institutions is declining. So give us a call, 651-227-6000. And I want to go to Jason. And Jason, you're in Forest Lake, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct.
Your observation?
You know, I kind of want to talk about some responsibility from the past. If you remember the Bush v. Gore election and the hanging chads issue, about that time, a company by the name of Diebold Corporation was really advocating for these electronic voting machines. So when your guest called these antiquated voting machines, it's not that old that these systems were changed over. And there was uproar about having a lack of a paper trail. And I guess it's more of a comment than a question, but it seems to me that we're kind of revisiting this thing after a mistake from a, you know, that was precipitated by a corporation that really influenced how a lot of people are casting their votes. And it was a mistake that shouldn't have been made, in my opinion.
Larry?
So that's just
yeah.
a comment.
No, thank you. Thank you. What do you think, Larry? What's your reaction?
Yeah, I agree, although I might phrase it a little bit differently. Look, there were problems with, as we knew from 2000, with the system that they were using in Florida and the systems that they were using in much of the country.
The infamous hanging chads, yes.
Hanging chads. We saw the kind of mess, and people were warning about that for a long time before the 2000 election, but that was just a problem waiting to happen. But and certainly, we should have been listening to election security experts when we passed the Help America Vote Act, which is what resulted in the purchase of new voting machines, when they said we need to have paper backup, no question about it. I think a big mistake that we made at that time was, and we're still making this mistake, frankly, is that Congress thought, all right, we'll spend all this money to replace all these voting systems, and we went to computerized voting systems around the country, and then we're done. And what they forgot was their computers, and computers need constant maintenance and upgrades and security, and they need to be replaced every 10 or 15 years, just like you would replace your laptop
right.
or your desktop that you use in your office. And Congress hasn't provided that consistent support, and really nobody has. And as a result, we are now 15 to 20 years after that legislation passed, and around the country, this equipment is often falling apart. Not only do we have the danger of these systems being paperless, but also most of them are no longer manufactured. It's difficult to find replacement parts. So the Brennan Center has done surveys of election officials where they're reporting they're getting replacement parts on eBay, which I would say is a security risk in and of itself.
Yeah, that no question about that. But let's go back to the phones and John in Minneapolis. John?
Good morning. Yeah, I'd be curious, especially your guest in Barcelona, if she could speak to the way in which election meddling is a form of statecraft that intelligence agencies have been using, especially maybe the United States, since our founding, perhaps considering the spies we had working in France all up into the 70s and 80s in South America. And certainly one has to wonder what's been going on in the Middle East for the last 45 years. If what Russia is doing is just a broader scheme that intelligence agencies use, and if these agencies use these schemes to learn from each other and to develop the craft of spying and trying to move elections in a certain way to benefit a country or a corporation. Thank you.
Alex?
So I would argue that what Putin did in 2016 and continues to try to do is very different. I think in our we don't have a perfect history by any means, but you'd have to go back a ways to find it, and we do it within a democratic system which has oversight. Again, it's not perfect. You're going to find lots of problems. But when we've had those problems, we've made the attempts to throw light on it and to address them and try to fix them. What Putin is doing is different. This is a direct attack on democracy itself. And so this is an attempt to bring about a very different system, to tear down our system, to make his system comparatively stronger. And it's not being done to make America great again, or to make France great again, or make Italy great again, or any of these places where Putin is carrying out the exact same playbook. This is all done to help himself. And he's using deceptive means, I would argue, to carry it out. So yes, perhaps the United States every now and then says, as we, you know, the State Department did recently, we are all for Russians being able to go out and protest and have freedom of speech, which we've the embassy in Moscow tweeted that out recently with the protests over there.
Right.
But what Putin is doing is complete deception, because he's using clandestine and covert means to try to do it.
And so I want to also follow up on something that you said earlier. Now, you know, this issue about trust, and what role do you see in this trust the high-tech firms, the Facebook, the Google, are going to have to play going forward? So we know what happened in 2016, but what about going forward? What do you see the role of the high-tech firms?
That's a huge question,
yes.
And I don't know if anybody has figured that out yet. I don't know what the ethics are behind that. We're the largest economy for a reason, because we're a capitalist system and private companies are allowed to make a profit. But we need to decide as a society what we're okay with. I sort of always couldn't understand when people got very, very angry when Edward Snowden revealed that, you know, NSA and the U.S. government was gathering certain types of information, whereas all those same people were giving away all that information and more to Facebook and Google for free. So, and the government, the U.S. government, is actually sworn and created to protect its citizens, whereas Facebook and Google are there for their shareholders and are there to make a profit. So I don't know how you regulate that, but I think that's a very big ethical question that we're going to be facing going forward.
And Larry, what do you think about the high-tech firms?
I just wanted to add to that really quickly. Alex mentioned But in any case, Alex was talking about basically hiding behind and doing covertly much of the action on the part of Putin. And one of the things that we've, you know, one of the problems that we've had with social media, Facebook and Twitter, is basically the use of trolls and bots hide who's behind messages with the Russian government or actors acting on behalf of the Russian government, pretending to be Americans when they're actually not. And the social media companies say that they have been exposing and getting rid of some of these trolls that act on their sites, but there's been very little transparency into how they're doing this and when they're doing this. And so one thing that I'd love to see from the social media companies is just more transparency in what they're doing around all this stuff.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And I want to reach out to Ray in Minneapolis. Ray?
Hello.
Hello. What's your question
comment? Thank you very much for taking my... I'm an election judge and wondering if there's any role an election judge can play in securing elections this year. Not at the systems level, but at the voter level in the precincts.
How long have you been an election judge?
This will be my 30th year coming up.
Yeah. So, Larry, I think this is probably a question for you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you very much for your service and doing that. And one of the things that all of us could be doing is more volunteering or working in polling places. It's absolutely critical for restoring faith in the system, ensuring that people that come to the polls have more faith and understanding in the election systems. And I would say that election judges, poll workers play a critical role in ensuring our elections are secure, knowing just basic things like knowing the rules, knowing what to do when voting machines go down to make sure that people can still vote, making sure that if there are problems with the registration, with the registration system or with poll books, that people still get provisional ballots so that they can vote and be counted later, and making sure that they get the proper instructions to fill out the forms so that those votes can be counted correctly. So I think just the act of working in a polling place and knowing the rules and what to do if there are problems on election day are critical to securing our elections.
All right, let's go to Fempton in St. Paul. Fempton?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question to see whether you would care to discuss our national elections. Here's my premise. We don't need the help of Russians to corrupt and undermine our democratic institution, because this is already happening. And my comment, my example, is the actions of the Democratic National Committee during the last election, in which the supporters of Hillary Clinton undermined the candidacy of Bernie Sanders.
Okay, so this is an interesting question, this sort of underlying question about, because we're talking about Russian interference, the potential for other interference, but how much are we undermining domestically a lot of what we consider the security of our elections? Larry?
Well, look, I do think that there are things, and this is something that the is at the core of what the Brennan Center works on, efforts related to voter suppression, requirements that serve as barriers for people to vote that are unnecessary, talk of unsupported accusations of voter fraud, which we've unfortunately heard from the president and others, as a basis for undermining faith in election outcomes. These are things that, frankly, the Russian government picked up on in the 2016 election. And I do have concerns that unsupported accusations about the integrity or lack of integrity in the election system are going to be amplified by foreign governments looking to interfere in our elections and looking to undermine confidence in elections. So I do have real concerns about that going into 2020.
And Alex, I want to ask you, you're in Barcelona, Spain right now. You're in Europe. Are there places in the world that you think are starting to address this whole issue about outside meddling or meddling in an election well? Are there some programs that we should be thinking about emulating or perhaps not emulating?
Well, speaking actually, bringing in the last point that was made, we do have to accept that some of this influence, some of what the Russians did against us, was exploiting a system and an environment that already existed. So in intelligence, we talk about in covert action that you cannot create the conditions to exploit. You can only exploit the conditions as they already exist. And so Russia did a very good job of understanding where our weaknesses were and how primed we were to be angry with each other, but also that we do have holes in our own election system. So I know the Brennan the Brennan Center, for example, has worked a lot on looking at dark money. So if you look at the mm-hmm. Citizens United mm-hmm. and some other, some of these other, laws that have been passed, the amount of money now that can go into our politics and into our political system is unprecedented, and it's dark money. We don't know where it's coming from. So there is a case of, this is a domestic issue because these are our own laws, and it could be money from any American, any lobbyist, anybody, but it could also be Russian money coming in through an LLC and donated to a super PAC. It could be Saudi money, Qatari money. It could be any of these. So we need to understand that this is our problem to fix. I think the bigger problem is we still have to understand that it is our problem to fix. We're so busy yelling over the politics and it was Trump's fault or it's not Trump's fault. The issue is we need to get over the partisan part, and we actually need to start fixing it. And part of doing that, I think, is understanding, as I said before, that Putin's playbook has been used all over the place. So you asked, because I'm based in Europe, if I've seen it elsewhere and how it's playing out. There's a case going on right now in Italy where audio was actually released. Matteo Salvini is one of the deputy prime ministers of Italy. He's also the interior minister. And there had been reports in the media that he had cut a deal with Russians, an oil deal, in order to funnel money into Lega, into his political party, running just before the European Parliament elections in May, this past May. And he was able to sort of hold off those accusations until actual audio of the conversation leaked. And now he's much more on his back foot. So people need to start understanding this isn't politics. This is Putin running the same playbook in all of these countries. We need to start understanding this as a national security issue, and we have to put the politics aside.
So speaking of that, so Larry, so off of what Alex is saying, there have been some proposals out there, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said no. So mm-hmm. in much of this conversation, there seems to be, or at least my impression is, a lot of bipartisan, we need to be improving our election system, and yet it also seems it's being stopped.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's certainly true. There is bipartisan support in a number of bills in this area. I would say when it comes to the issue of securing our election infrastructure, I have a little bit of hope that something's going to happen because that could be a budget matter, and as folks know, there was agreement between Congress and the president to increase the budget this year. So there is an opportunity to negotiate some extra money for states and counties around election security. Democrats in the House passed a $600 million appropriation for election security, which would address a number of the things that I talked about. And I think there's a chance in the negotiations between the sides, regardless of what Senator McConnell wants, that there will be some compromise there for some additional support to states and locals. On some of the other things that Alex mentioned, whether you're talking about dark money, there's the Disclose Act, which had a lot of support in the past, but right now seems stymied. There's something called the Honest Ads Act, which Senator Klobuchar and Warner and Graham, a bipartisan bill, have talked about to finally bring the internet under the same kind of campaign finance rules that the rest of our media is. Those things would be really helpful, but it's hard to see them happening before the 2020 election if Majority Leader McConnell doesn't change his thoughts on this subject before then.
Alex, what would you like to see done?
Well, I would like to see all of that done, but I would add to what Larry said. This goes back to that issue of trust. Even if local secretaries of state and local election officials, for example, have these additional resources, we need to be sure that there's also trust built between those local officials and the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. So in the aftermath of 2016, we were seeing media reports where Jay Johnson, who at the time was Obama's head of Department of Homeland Security, was calling local election officials back in August and September of 2016, urging them to be aware that Russia was trying some strange things, that they were poking into our computers and these types of things. And the local officials thought, oh, no, this is just the Obama administration trying to help Hillary. And there was not that faith that this was, in fact, DHS and the federal government looking out for national security. So, again, that issue of faith and trust between local and national also needs to be built.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Mike has been waiting patiently. Mike in St. Louis Park.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious as to whether there still exists in this country precincts where the election officials in the precinct have to telephone in their results to the county.
Huh. Larry, do you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, certainly. I mean, we've got 8,000 election jurisdictions, more than that, in the United States. So yes, many of them do telephone in their results, and there's a paper tape that is printed from every machine, in addition to the memory card that kind of holds the electronic totals, and those are generally brought over to a central place where they're counted as well.
Alex, I want to ask you, for the average citizen, I mean, we're not cyber experts. We're not, we didn't work for the CIA and the directorate. But we have jobs to do and all that other stuff. But are there things that we can do or can think about in order to, combat this potential for election mischief?
Absolutely. I would say we are our own first best line of defense. And one of the things that American citizens can do is be careful in how they consume information. So when you read something, who is it coming from? Who is the source? And that doesn't just mean the source is grandma who posted it on Facebook, but who wrote the story? Is it just, is it coming from the New York Times? Is it coming from your local NPR station? Or is it coming from, random Blogspot, whoever, or even some place that's trying to look like a legitimate news site but doesn't actually exist? So we need to be careful. If something comes across as very partisan, it probably is made that way for a reason. So we need to be very careful how we consume our information. I would say that's first and foremost. And second, as I said before, I think we really just need to please put the partisan stuff aside. I think that's a very large ask. But if we could start looking at the Russian intelligence operation and election security as actual national security issues and not as political issues.
And Larry, same question to you. I mean, because you're steeped in this election reform, working with and surveying and talking to a lot of election officials. I mean, what can the average citizen do?
Well, I would agree with everything that Alex said. When it comes to the act of voting itself, first of all, of course, everybody going out and voting. One of the things that troubles me the most is when I hear people say, "Well, maybe it isn't worth it to vote at all because I can't trust the system." And that is certainly allowing those that want to disrupt our elections to win. Volunteering or working at polling places on election day is critical, and just making sure that we're all participating I think, critical to making sure that the system continues to work.
Okay, I want to squeeze in one more question, and this is Catherine in Minneapolis. Catherine?
Hi. Thanks for my call. A great topic. One piece of this that has not been discussed at all is the role of state legislation, because a state can't go down to a big box store down on the corner and buy a optical scanner or a stack of empty paper ballots. And I used to be an election judge, so I'm kind of like been following this election administration issues for a long time. And what we have here in Minnesota is called the Minnesota Model, which is voter verified paper ballots with an audit trail. And this also gets into how you do your recounts. And this is all governed by state legislation. So these states that have the electronic touchscreen machines probably don't have legislation to mandate paper ballots and all the other protocols. And my question, especially to Mr. Norden, is, does he know briefly on the state level what legislations are being proposed or what has passed recently in order to secure our elections with traceable paper ballots?
All right. Well, Larry, you have like 30 seconds, maybe 20 seconds to give your answer to that one.
Well, I'll answer by saying that a number of states recently have replaced their paperless systems. Virginia, Delaware, South Carolina, and Georgia are looking to replace them. So there's a general agreement that that we shouldn't have paperless systems. It's the rare exception that anybody is still buying those paperless systems. So that's the kind of good news on that front.
Well, on that note, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And for all the people who called in and are waiting, thanks a lot. Larry Norden is director of the Brennan Center's Election Reform Program. Alex Finley, who joins us by Skype from Barcelona, is a former officer in the CIA's Directorate of Operations.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to the discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet us at @CarrieNPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all our shows by subscribing to this podcast. You can send us your questions or comments by emailing talk@npr.org.